B is for beef. Here's a skill testing question. Which country is number one in the world in beef consumption? Time up. It's Argentina, and by a country mile. They chew through 76 kilos per person. I bet some of you thought the USA. Well, the Argies scoff double the amount of beef that the Yanks do, and in turn, our American cousins woof double what we Brits consume. Frankly, we're beef-eating wimps, which is odd because, in history, the French called the English le roast beef, mind you, as a mild insult, just as we call them frogs. And the only part of our British cuisine that Johnny Foreigner gave us any credit for was beef, and then only reluctantly. In 1748, the Swedish botanist Per Kalm used a waspish, backhanded compliment when opining, "The British have delicious meat because of the fine pastures and expertise of their butchers." Mind you, cooking as practiced by most Englishmen doesn't extend much beyond roast beef and plum pudding. That's a bit rich from a man whose Swedish homeland today gives iconic status to smoked cod roe packaged in a squeezy metal tube, the Swedes call it kalliskavia, that looks to me suspiciously like motorbike lubricant. And anyway, how many ways can you prepare pickled herring? And what's so Swedish about their meatballs? Boo sucks to them. Here's another searching question. What's the most popular meat in the world? Well, it's pork, with chicken a close second and fish and seafood in the bronze medal position. The fact is that beef is a long way forth. Most of the densely populated Asian countries eat little or no beef. In fact, cattle are seen as tractors rather than juicy steaks. And in tropical countries, beef cattle struggle to cope with the ravages of tsetse fly. I was talking in Queensland, Australia at a beef conference a few years ago, and an Indonesian delegate leant over the dinner table and told me confidentially that the beef on his plate in front of him was more than the annual consumption in his country. The word beef comes from the Anglo-Norman French boeuf. The ancient Romans were iffy about beef, apart from as a source of milk, an occasional sacrificial animal, although it was popular in Greece, home of the first domesticated cattle. For centuries, cattle in many parts of the world have been considered capital, wealth on the hoof, and were not slaughtered until they were close to death from old age and or exhaustion. I mean, to this day, the Fulani and Maasai tribes of Africa count cattle as currency and are loath to eat them. They'll drink their blood, as indeed did Scottish Highlanders in the 18th century. They bled their cattle in the springtime and boiled the blood and mixed it with milk and oatmeal. Yummy, bring on haggis for the second course, say I. In Britain, North America and Australia, we've been most likely to judge a country's gastronomic level by the quality of its beef, whereas French and Italians have been more likely to judge by the quality of the bread and wine. Mad cow disease apart, we're pretty good at beef in the UK. Hereford and Aberdeen Angus cattle have been the two most influential global breeds of beef cattle. British cattle were exported to the continent even before the Romans arrived. And meat in general, and beef in particular, are associated with good living. The first letter of the ancient Hebrew, Greek, and Latin alphabets were what we now call the letter A, and represented by the head of an ox. If you turn a capital A on its side, it sort of looks like the head of a bull. Do you get the idea? The nickname beef eater for the yeoman of the guard in the Tower of London came from the term used for live-in manservants fed on a good diet. Beef has always had the smack of male food about it. When I was completing my doctorate on meat marketing in low-income areas of the northeast of England, I noticed that some mums would buy chicken for themselves and their kids, but beef for their husbands, who, quote, needed stronger meat because they worked down the mines or at the shipyards. As cattle moved from beasts of burden to premium sources of meat in the 19th century, beef entered the top league of European gastronomy. Mrs. Beaton, a Victorian version of our celebrity chefs, presented as many recipes on cold beef dishes as she did for hot dishes. Why so? Well, the wealthy bought lots of beef, and it all had to be used up. They might have bought, for example, a baron of beef, which was the entire sirloin from a side of beef, probably 7 to 8 kilos or more, and this was certainly worthy of more than one meal. My own childhood memories are that there was enormous predictability in the family weekly menu. Our local butcher would decide what we were to have for the Sunday meal centrepiece, not my mum. "I think you'd like a nice piece of beef this weekend, Mrs. Hughes," he'd say. And that was 3 days of main meals sorted for us. A traditional roast for Sunday lunch, sliced cold beef for Monday tea, and what was left was minced and covered with potato for Tuesday cottage pie. Remember, if it had minced beef in it, then it was cottage pie, but if it was minced lamb, then it was shepherd's pie. Incidentally, if Mrs. Beaton broiled meat, that meant she grilled it. The term broil came from the old French brûlé, to burn, and is in common usage in America today. But in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, we banished essentially the word broiling and replaced it with grilling. The intrinsic nutritional goodness of beef was recognised 150 years ago or more. However, there was a basic problem. Beef was premium priced in Europe and not available to the huddled masses. Yet when produced on the endless verdant pastures of the South American pampas, beef was in ample supply and cheap. In the absence of refrigerated transport, what to do? Well, the great German scientist Justus von Liebig commercialised the goodness extracted from boiled and evaporated meat juices using his eponymous Liebig condenser. Ring a bell? Perhaps a distant memory from your early high school chemistry lessons? In 1900, Liebig's meat extract appeared in branded form as OXO and was made in the Uruguayan town of Fray Bentos. Outlandishly untruthful advertisements for OXO and for an early and still current competitor, Bovril, claimed that a pound of extract contained the concentrated essence of 36 pounds of meat. Now, OXO and Bovril are much-loved iconic food brands in the UK to this very day. And Marmite is a look-alike vegetarian product made from brewer's yeast. And indeed, von Liebig had a hand in its emergence too, noting that it could be made into a concentrated food product which resembled extract of meat in appearance, colour and smell. Incidentally, all three are now owned by Unilever PLC. For city dwellers, there's something magical and adventurous about cattle ranching. Remember, cattle are the raw material for our steaks. Find a big ranch and try helicopter mustering, i.e. rounding up beef cattle in a whirlybird. I spent a day as a fascinated, albeit terrified, passenger doing this on a 1 million acre cattle station in Western Australia. Every now and again, the pilot put me down on the ground while he got fancy, which meant he tore into the trees in his copter at a 90-degree angle to flush out the cattle that were trying to elude him. As he said, "It's best you see this from the ground, David, or you'll just throw up and make a mess of both of us." I saw no reason to argue. Moving on, I flew 5 hours east to talk with an organic beef company in Queensland. 18 million acres of organic range farmed by 30 cattlemen. As we came into land at Quilpie, as the sign says, home of the world-famous Quilpie beef pie, really? Well, anyway, it's world-famous in Quilpie. The cattle stocking rate in this region is one cow per 100 acres, and that one cow, just as the helicopter cowboy told me, is bound to be sheltering from the sun under one of the few trees in the Australian outback. Returning to Brisbane on that same trip, I stopped Friday overnight in the town of Tambo, population 430. The period Royal Karangara Hotel had a large marquee attached to it. "Doesn't seem likely that the circus is in town," I mused. Further investigations revealed that A, it was wool clipping time and the friendly itinerant New Zealand Maori shearers were up for some end of the week fun, and B, the hotel manager had booked a group of mature lady strippers from the city to provide appropriate entertainment. I didn't join them myself because I looked silly in a sheep shearer's singlet and the rough-hewn wooden benches seemed a tad uncomfortable for a city boy. Ho-hum, it's a little different in the outback.